Good morning, and thank you all for joining us here today. And we're honored to be joined by Congressman Keith Ellison for the next hour. And our purpose here is to revisit a trip that we took together, ourselves, CSIS, our Commission on Smart Global Health Policy, along with CARE as our partner, in August to Kenya. And when we went there, with a couple of objectives in mind. We wanted to bring a number of our commissioners and bring a number of the people that work on this from CARE and CSIS, and I'll name those in a minute. Many of the people on that trip are here this morning. Look at the impacts of U.S. investments across several different health sectors. Look at the prospects for bringing about greater integration of effort. Put a very special focus on maternal and child health, which is something that has emerged as a terribly important new priority with a lot of energy around it in Congress, in the administration, and among advocacy groups. And it's something that's important to the Commission and particularly dear to the agenda of CARE and to Helene Gayle, the President and CEO of CARE, who is also the co-chair of our Commission and who was with us on this trip. We had a number of other commissioners who joined us, Karen Remley, the Commissioner for Health, the State of Virginia, Mike Merson, professor at Duke and head of the Duke Global Health Institute, Stephen Phillips from ExxonMobil, and others. We're joined here this morning also by a number of people who put that trip together and participated in it. Karen Meacham, Jennifer Cook, who heads the Africa program here, Karen Meacham and Lisa Carty, who worked together with me at the Center on Global Health Policy. We're also joined, Sarah Lynch from CARE is here today. Sarah and Jody Winterhoff were very integral in putting the trip together and coming with us. And we'll hear in a few minutes from Katie Porter, who heads up the CARE legislative work, who was very instrumental in trying to think through the trip. We were there August 8th through 13th. We had the chance, as you'll hear from Congressman Ellison, on that Sunday of the 9th, we had the chance to put some, I think, very special kind of conversations together in Nairobi before the full delegation had actually begun its work. We had a chance to engage with a series of women's groups who came together, who people living with HIV and advocates on HIV, and that was a very moving and dramatic session on that. On the state of particularly of the mobilization among women's groups in Kenya. We met with the Somali Kenyan leadership as well as with Somali leadership and with Uld Abdallah, the UN Secretary General's special envoy on Somalia. We used this occasion to really try and get a better grip on what was happening with respect to Somalia and how both Somalis in Kenya and Somali Kenyans were looking at things. Later in the week, at the very end, Jennifer Cook and Congressman Ellison were able to visit the Dadaab refugee camp up on the northeast border area, 300,000 Somali refugees there. Over the course of the week, we covered a lot of ground. The entire delegation, Bill Fallon, Helene Gayle, the other commissioners that I mentioned, were together in Kenya. Visited a number of two women's hospitals, Kibera, the largest slum area, to a very intriguing new enterprise there, begun by an NGO, Carolina for Kibera, and now joined together with CDC. We had a chance at a dinner at the ambassador's residence to hear from a number of the leaders on the Kenyan side on health. We had a luncheon engagement with the Minister of Medical Services, Peter Anyango. Tuesday, there was travel. The group broke into different parts and moved in different directions. Congressman Ellison was out in the West in Nyanza and had the opportunity to visit a number of CARE sites as well as to engage with folks at the labs and with others involved in the regional programs, the U.S.-driven effort to bring about much greater, what's called AFIA, much greater integration of effort using PEPFAR monies and others across different health interventions. We concluded our formal program on that next day and Wednesday back in Nairobi, which involved concluded with a public forum, pretty lively, spirited public forum with a number of key Kenyan interlocutors. So with that, I want to quickly just ask Daniel to show us a short video. We've partnered, Joe Rospers was with us, one of our commissioners, and we brought a number of people from Blue State Digital who are helping us put together a website on the commission, smartglobalhealth.org. I'd encourage all of you to go to that. We are putting out a number of video products. This is one that I would just like to show, which captures a bit of the spirit of the interaction between some of our commissioners and the groups that we are meeting with.
I think across the world, there's been a renewed emergence of the concept of getting the community to function as health workers, to really start developing the concept of health within their community. We see it here in Kenya, around people who've had HIV. In the United States, you can go to urban areas and rural areas and really see people who are really energized.
Na nimejitokeza kwa sababu moja, maana mimi mwenyewe niko positive, na nilikuja nikakuta kuna umuhimu wa kujitokeza. Nilifikiria nilirudi miaka ya nyuma 2002 wakati huo kulikuwa kuna siri kubwa sana hata kama ni bwana wako amepimwa asipokubali wewe uambiwe utaambiwa na ndio niposa nikafikiria kama hapo ingekuwa wazi kama kufikia dakika ya sasa hata mimi kirusi akingenipata nikaamua kujitoa muhanga kuongea pale popote ama kwa mtu yoyote status zangu
kuna wengine wanashindwa kwenda hospitali kwa sababu wanaogopa kwa sababu wanaogopa wanaona labda wakienda hiyo ni stigma wakienda kupimwa watapatikana ni positive hiyo pia inachangia
most of the people were afraid to come out and test to know their status but now we can see most of them do there's still a bit of stigma but if we compare it with the way it was before it's really reduced.
This is not the end of the life. Showing them my remedies or those are these tabs that I'm using this. They soon will follow this program because it is not the end of the life.
Mimi pia nimejitolea sana kwa sababu nimeona kuwa kule nyanjani ambapo nafanya na hao clients. Kuna shida nyingi, watu ni wagonjwa, watu hawataki kujitokeza, sasa ni sisi tupigane na wao ili kwamba wajikubali kwa sababu ya stigma sana.
Pia atajieka wazi. Na nimeona kubwa ina muhimu wa kujitokeza na kuelezea wenzetu ili nao wataweza kujua kumbe kirusi kiko katikati yetu na tunaishi na kirusi na ukiwa na kirusi sio mwisho wa maisha. Na pia utaweza kusaidia wale katika community kupunguza ile stigma.
These individuals would like to be a community health worker 5 years from now.
Your courage and initiative in doing this work in the community is absolutely critical to making progress. We make progress when we have people who are willing to stand up and be leaders. And we're happy to be in your presence, so thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll be posting several more of these that will feature different aspects of this trip. Katie, did you want to say a quick word?
Thanks, Steve. I know that Helene wanted to be here, and she's sorry she's unable, and just asked me to say a few words. Thank you again, Congressman Ellison, for joining us this morning, and for all of you for joining us. I know many of you, but for those I don't know, again, my name is Katie Porter, and I'm heading up CARE's maternal health advocacy work. As Steve mentioned, my colleague Sarah Lynch is running CARE's learning tours. I would encourage you to touch base with her after this to learn more about the work that CARE is doing to bring members of Congress like Congressman Ellison overseas to really see the programs. One of the reasons that CARE has prioritized the issue of maternal health is because it's at the foundation of all the work that we do in the field. As I think many of you would agree, one of the best indicators of the health of a community is the health of its women and its children and its mothers. So we were really pleased to be able to partner with CSIS and to travel with Congressman Ellison to look at those synergies for ourselves on the ground. It was a great trip, and I think that it sets us in a better position to advocate for strong U.S. policy on global health, keeping women and mothers at its core. So we look forward to working with Mr. Ellison on the Hill as we move forward. Thanks.
Thanks, Katie. So, Congressman Ellison, thank you so much for being a commissioner. Thank you so much for your leadership role on the Financial Services Committee and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And many other domains. So, if you could perhaps share with us sort of your reflections on the trip and the most important impressions, and then we can open things up as we get downstream and invite some participation from our audience. Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you, Steve, and thanks to everybody who was on the trip. It was an important trip. We all learned a lot, but I think it's important to just bear in mind that the trip was really not about studying Kenya, although that's where we were and that was the content. The point of the trip was to try to learn more about how the United States can interact with the entire global community around the issue of global health and how global health, as a one of the arrows in the quiver, is an effective way to reach out to the rest of the world. But global health as one means of relating to the rest of the world, knowing full well that there are others, that there are, you know, there's diplomacy, there's even security issues, a range of issues that we use to reach out to the Western world, but that global health is and certainly can be a much more effective way that we as Americans reach out to the rest of the world and build a safer, more secure, more prosperous globe for everybody. And so that's kind of the position that I went into the trip with, and I think all of us had that idea in mind, that there was a lot that we could learn and a lot we could do to try to improve our approach. Kenya is an excellent example and a good place to start on a case study as to how we can improve our approach to the rest of the world vis-a-vis global health, because there's such a tremendous global health footprint that the United States has been able to join with Kenyans to make there. About $600 million worth of HIV funding there, quite a bit. And the United States is, through PEPFAR and other programs, making a very strong statement about what we can do together with Kenyans to try to deal with this scourge of HIV and AIDS. And there's no doubt that in all of the visits that we had, that the U.S. Global Health Initiative around HIV was having a great impact. People who years before really were given a death sentence, really were having their lives extended not by months and not by a few years, but by even decades. And not only that, not only were people living longer, because they were living longer, they were able to learn what they could do to help their neighbors out. And so it was common for people who had been HIV positive to be activists in the field, to be out there as health workers, to be advocates, to be trying to diminish stigma and have people come out and live more open lives and talk about how healthier living practices could lead to longer life and healthier life. In the process, people were being trained. People were learning how to be more effective advocates for themselves. And one of the things that we learned in Kenya, and I'm sure this is true throughout the continent of Africa, maybe throughout the world, certainly true in places like Pakistan, is that people who have the wherewithal to complete their education, go to medical school, often leave. And so if you go to GW Hospital, it's not unlikely that a Kenyan nurse will be doing your blood draw. But Well, you know, the fact is that these are things that happen, and they're quite common. And so, you know, if we can build capacity, Kenya can retain her medical professionals, and that can lead to the overall long-term health of all Kenyans. And so this idea of capacity building is extremely important. Another thing we learned not only is Kenya, you know, has this drain brain problem, they really, while they have very talented healthcare professionals and doctors, many of those healthcare professionals go into hospital administration sort of just by accident. They really don't have a hospital administration program at their major universities. This is another thing that I think as we move forward, we need to think about, you know, because obviously doctors can do tremendous work and nurses can do tremendous work treating patients, but that does not mean they know how to administer a hospital, and there's a lot that we could learn. And if you have so many impressive, amazing American universities that know how to really do this kind of hospital administration, the system of healthcare delivery is something that I think we there's ample ground to work on. In addition to that, you know, we went to I accompanied Helene Gale to the Nyanza province, to the city of Kisumu and the surrounding area. We General Fallon led his faction to Mombasa, and of course, both of us spent a lot of time in the city of Nairobi. But nearly every place we went, we found a number of either governments or NGOs contributing to either food, medicine, or in some way to the improvement of life, but it really wasn't amply clear how these things were being coordinated among donors. This is something else that we could really explore and try to figure out how we could streamline and coordinate and organize. And, you know, a third observation I'd make is that, you know, we're doing great things with HIV/AIDS, and I think that it's important to point out that Kenyans are smart, Kenyans are capable. And I was impressed with them. And I was impressed with how well Americans were working with them. And I think it's important because we need to, as we move into this new era, there's a lot of reasons I could offer to support what I'm about to say, but hopefully you'll walk there with me without the proof for the moment. But there's a lot of reasons why we need to move from the idea of this world power, a donor, a patron, into a more equal relationship and partnership. And this is an important thing, and I think that there are clear examples on the ground of us doing this. But the best one I saw is when we were at the center that is operated jointly with Kenya and the Center for Disease Control studying malaria. Now, that was out of the box of HIV, but it was still an important example of how Kenyans and Americans were combining their talents for mutual benefit. This was not an aid program, but because Kenya, or at least the part we were in, was a malaria zone, and the United States, either through military or other reasons, sends people into malaria zones all over the world, we have every reason to learn about how to combat and address malaria and perhaps even one day develop a vaccine. And yet Kenyan doctors and researchers and Americans were working together in a very productive way to do good work. And I was really impressed by that. I was actually proud of that because, yes, the United States brought financial wherewithal for the labs, but those doctors running around there were Kenyan. It was a partnership, and I was happy to see it. And, you know, let me also say that, you know, as we spent time in Kenya, I also went to northeastern Kenya with members of CIS, and we had a great visit to the Dadaab, a refugee camp as well. We went to the Ifo camp. There are three camps, not just one, three camps in Dadaab. Dadaab is a Kenyan city. It's come to be known as like this Somali refugee camp, but it actually, before there were any refugees, there was a town in Kenya, Dadaab. And the refugee camp we visited was the Ifo refugee camp. And it's important to know that, yes, there are 300,000 people there, but it was designed for 90,000. So it's over triple the capacity that it was intended for. And there, again, we met some amazing individuals. We met some people there who were just doing tremendous work. Some of those were captured in the photographs that were up there. We met this young doctor. I think her name was Dr. Celine, and she has 300,000 people to care for and three doctors. And yet, they were doing the tough work there. They were doing the hospital we went to covered a broad range of services, everything from dealing with mother-to-child transmission programs and trying to cut that down, to nutrition, to maternal maternity and delivery even. She had trained people to the point where, unless it's a complicated delivery, perhaps needing a cesarean, she could just let the midwives do it. And so there's a tremendous amount of ingenuity taking place right there that we need to capture and learn from. Also, it was clear that while there were 300,000 people there, there were also 6,000 people coming across the border every day from Somalia. So the Kenyans, and this conversation took place in Nairobi, are thinking, you know, look, we're getting to capacity here, and this is already a security issue for us as well as a resource issue in the middle of an enormously painful drought that was going on. And yet they were thinking, we don't really want to build another refugee camp, because if we build it, they will come. And yet they're going to come whether you build it or not. And so this is an important thing that, you know, I think diplomatically, you know, that might be an opportunity for the United States to say, look, we will do our part if you will open up the other camp, because we got real sanitation issues. We got every kind of humanitarian problem you can imagine right here, and it's not getting better. By the way, there were people born in the Ifo refugee camp and were there since, and they were born in 1990, 1991. So they don't know anything other than Ifo refugee camp. But I will tell you that I represent a district in Minneapolis that has the highest percentage of Somali Americans in North America. And when I told friends that I was going to Dadaab, I got several letters to hand off to be delivered. And when I left, I got several letters. So there's so what's happening in this remote area of the world, Dadaab, has a very direct impact, at least to my little corner of the world in Minneapolis, and I'm quite certain here in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and probably all over the country. So let me just say, you know, we're in a position where we can truly reach out to the rest of the world on the basis of mutual interest and mutual respect. I know that when President Obama used that verbiage, he was in Cairo talking about the U.S. reaching out to the Muslim world, but I think we don't have to stop there. We can reach out to the whole world. And it's an exciting time to be reconceiving how we relate to the rest of the world. I'm certain that we have a lot of important partners. I think that we were in Kenya right after Secretary Clinton was there, she gave some very supportive but also clear commentary to Kenyans about the importance of moving forward on political reform. A word about that in a moment, and then I'll wrap it up. And, of course, Susan Rice had been there and spent time, as well as U.S. Trade Rep Ron Kirk had spent time there. And also Secretary of Agriculture Vilsack had spent time. So the administration in Washington is moving out there, and members of Congress are doing so as well. I think that the hallmarks of our new approach, I hope, are promotion and encouragement of rule of law and democracy, of promoting and strengthening prosperity and economic ties that are mutually beneficial, abandoning just the purely extractive model where we deal with some elites to give us some concessions, to take out some stuff, and then we take the stuff and then we're gone. And until we need some more, then we go back to those same elites and get some more stuff. Hope we can stop that. And then third, global health, an essential part of our approach. We have to help rebuild the public health sector in Africa, in Kenya, around the globe. And then finally, conflict resolution. Desperately, we need a way to help people of the world resolve conflict. And we'd be well served if we could figure out a way to resolve conflict nonviolently too. And so these are some of the things that I hope to see in the period going forward. I believe that if it's a four-legged table, that global health absolutely must be one of those. It creates goodwill. It creates communities and strengthens their capacity to solve their own problems. It gives us an opportunity for partnership, and it is the right thing to do. So, last word, we had a tremendously informative community forum as the last thing that we did before we kind of broke. And it was, and I enjoyed it enormously. I was so honored to just be part of the panel. The most interesting thing to me was this observation, and this is what I'll leave you with. Somebody from the back said, Kenya must meet its stated commitment and expectation around appropriation on global health. They must put the amount of money into the national budget that is called for, and to this time they have not done it. Now, of course, they're having all kinds of political problems in Kenya, as you know, and I'm sure we'll probably get into it. But one insightful young parliamentarian said, look, we're trying to put money into roads, which gets things around. We're trying to put it into water, which gets things around, which helps, obviously has direct health impact. We're trying to build infrastructure. Fact is that the challenge, we know what to do and we know what needs to be done, but the challenges are enormous, and so therefore we're grateful that we have friends and donors from abroad to help us meet some of these immediate challenges, and yet those we have to take an active role in solving our own problems. And so I was heartened to hear him say that. I was impressed to hear him make that insight. And I think that if we keep along this path, we'll see ourselves paying dividends in years to come. In fact, we already have seen some. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. If I could fill in a few details on some of the themes that you just put on the table. On the positive side of things, I think we came away very impressed with the U.S. mission effort. You have the largest CDC contingent outside of Atlanta in Kenya. You have the lab out in the West that you referenced. You have a U.S. military lab that's been there for several decades that's done very important scientific research. You have a PEPFAR and aid mission there that are managing a huge program. You have certainly in the air there, as well as in other projects like the integrated project in Eldoret that Mike Merson and Karen Meacham visited, integration has become a big theme. People are struggling actively with this idea of how to take that core push that was driven by HIV and elaborate that and stretch it into new priorities and integrate across interventions. And the maternal and child health agenda is very much front and center in that. In a moment, I'd like you to say a few words about that. The Kenyan technical expertise and commitment was also quite high. At the hospital level, at the ministerial level, in the labs, this is a country with considerable talent, and you can mark it over the last decade the degree to which those numbers have risen. When you looked at the numbers of trained personnel under the CDC field training program, for folks on surveillance, on preparedness. It's gone from 2 or 3 to 15 in just the last couple of years. So some substantial gains on both the Kenyan side, the U.S. effort, quite impressive, very much integration and struggling to figure out how to do that front and center. The governance issues, also front and center. We had come in, as Keith just mentioned, right after the Secretary's visit. That was a set of tough conversations in which some very tough markers were laid down about ending impunity, bringing to account those responsible for the mass violence that had happened after the December 07 elections, the anti-corruption. There was something in today's paper about these issues, Kofi Annan's speech yesterday in Nairobi around this. When you look at the U.S. investment at $600 million per year on health, it's a huge footprint. It's a huge experiment. It's a huge gamble. We're definitely seeing impacts. The question over the long term is the sustainability of that. The question is, do we have a partner in a government that we can believe in? Do we have a partner in the government there that will assume greater responsibility And I would say the picture is quite mixed. At the technical and staff level, it's a very encouraging picture. At the ministerial level, you've got a ministry that's been split in two because of the unity government. You have a commodity chain that is broken, a supply chain that's broken. You have a ministry that turns back 35 to 40% of its appropriated health dollars every year unspent. These are very serious. These are very serious challenges to this administration and others, other actors, in trying to figure out how to bring about a greater commitment from the Kenyan side so that we can get much more of an equal partnership going forward. On the regional conflict piece, I would just add, we underestimate the gravity of the Somali conflict upon Kenyan stability and thinking. And we routinely miss the fact that what happens there creates huge environmental and human stresses on that government, and security stresses, and they have multiplied in the last year. We heard that this camp had grown to 300,000 from under 200,000 earlier in the year. Eastleigh has doubled in size, the Somali-dominant suburb there in Nairobi. The drought and famine have further compounded those issues. While we were there, the decision was taken to deploy several battalions to spread emergency humanitarian relief. So it's still a fragile situation in which you're trying to put in place long-term programs. So could I come back to you, please, and talk a little bit about the maternal side, the gender side, and a little bit more about the governance. How do we deal with the governance?
Well, yeah, thanks, Steve. Let me start out with the governance issues. The governance issues are sort of the bowl in which you put all of these contents, right? If you got poor governance, you know, it's really hard to sustain any of these efforts. And when you take a step back and you look at Kenya, it's clear that it is extremely well positioned for the future, but that the governance issues present a very enormous challenge to that future. They have a lot of sharp people. They are well positioned geographically. They have resources. They have, I think, a history of relative calm and democracy, particularly by comparison, but the events of the post-election violence are still an enormous challenge for them, and they have yet to be able to overcome these difficulties, and the government just feels deadlocked. They have sort of like two of everything. So they have one person who's, and help me out here, Steve, if I don't get it all the way right. But they have one person whose job it is to deal with public health, and another person whose job it is to deal with hospitals. Is that how they broke it down? Right. And so they have these mixed mandates, these portfolios that are not really rational. And it's not that they don't know that they're not rational. They know they're not rational, but it's a political accommodation because of the political stalemate between the PNU and the ODM in the post-election period. They're not, you know, the reality is, if the United States said PEPFAR, the operative phrase in the president's emergency HIV/AIDS program is emergency, which implies that it's temporary, the duration of the emergency, what would you do? There's no good answer for that right now. And I think that it is related to governance, and it is related to planning. And again, I know there's no question in my mind that the Kenyans could figure out what to do. But given the political challenges I just mentioned, there's one thing to know what to do if you don't have to deal with all the political encumbrances. And then there's the reality of the political encumbrances, which says, well, yeah, that would work just fine. The problem is, we're not going to hand that ministry to you because you're not in our party. So they've got to fight it out. We in the United States, we understand political fights. I'm getting ready to go back to one in a few minutes. And so this is not something that the Kenyans cannot manage, but it's not certain that they will because, you know, it's just that difficult. Now let me talk about the maternal observations of maternal GBA. GBV, gender, but yeah, GBV, gender-based violence and the maternal issues. One of the high points and the low points was visiting a hospital in Nairobi where they were addressing gender-based violence. A high point because you had these sharp, talented, committed Kenyans there to do the best they could for their clients who walked through the door. They knew what they were doing, and they showed it at various points. In fact, if I may tell just a brief story, we met a woman who had both of her arms cut off by her husband, and they were from a rural area. Now, I want to tell you, before I was a member of Congress, I was a criminal defense attorney, and I've seen horrific acts of violence against women here in the United States. None of us should feel like, oh, that's what those Kenyans do. No, that's what those men do all over the globe. But the point was is that the man, the woman who had this horrific thing happen to her, the man was charged with a crime. But he was out and running around. And like, well, is he going to be brought to trial? When is this going to happen? And nobody could really had a clear answer on that. But she and her mother deserve a medal of valor because while the men in the family said, well, yes, it's wrong that my son cut your daughter's arms off, they kind of did kind of a family meeting about it. And the best I could gather is that some livestock may have been exchanged. And then that was pretty much it. So the woman and her mother say, oh, no, no way. We're out of here. And they pick up the injured woman's children and the mom of the injured woman and all these three generations. They go to Nairobi and they find help in this hospital with these wonderful people. And this is not something where Westerners are doing this for the Kenyans. This is Kenyans helping Kenyans with the help of other people who have some resources. This is a beautiful thing. And it's encouraging. But and then I thought, okay, I'm a American lawyer. Let me just tell these guys what they should do. I said, you know what you should do is you guys need to get a law that says that, you know, there's a presumption in favor of detaining a man who would do such a thing. And they said, well, no, we already have the law. We thank you, send us what you have, but we already have that. Our problem is getting the bill passed through the parliament. And they talked about how they had just passed a bill on sex offenses a few months or years before, and how that was an awful political struggle to get that through. And now getting this other bill through is because it's offending male dominance, it's offending all these kind of things. And so, again, the story is all over the world. They know what the right people know what the right thing is to do, but getting a political consensus to do it is the challenge. And so this is something I think the international community might continue to suggest to the government that as sort of the shining star of the horn, we have expectations that they are going to have to meet if they want to continue to assume that role that I believe Kenya has within its destiny. On to the issue of maternity. We found, I think, consistently, at least in my experience, we found consistently success where you had an HIV-infected mother and the danger was transmission to her child. We found that the protocols were being followed, that there were good outcomes, and that a relatively small number of children were being infected, and that even one children that showed up as having evidence of HIV infection as they got older, that dissipated in many kids, not all, but many. And I felt that was encouraging. I mean, maybe other people saw other things. I can't recall the statistic offhand, and I didn't study it before I came, but I did feel that was being well managed. And this is an enormously important thing. We also found that you had we visited a whole village where there were women who were, I think can only be described as AIDS nannies because they all had family members who died and left children with no one to care for them. And so we saw Kenyon stepping up trying to manage this gap in the family that was devastating to Kenyan society. And so, again, a picture of triumph and heroism and bravery and courage, and also a picture of some startling challenges.
Thank you. What I'd like to do now is open the floor for some brief comments and questions from the audience. We have two microphones right here. So please step forward and just quickly identify yourself and keep your comments quite succinct, please.
Good morning. This is a real pleasure to be here. My name is Dr. Larry Kazaza, and I have my own 501c3 NGO, ACAM, African Communities Against Malaria. Mm. I'm just back from Kenya, out there 2.5 years. Let me compliment you on capturing on your relatively short visit what took me 2 years to learn. Listening and working. And your video says it all. These poor people who have on their Sunday best come out and who are the interface between these programs and the communities, the recipients. But they don't even get paid. They're volunteers. What's wrong with this picture? And there are thousands of them out there, and I work with them. My point is this. When is the top-down, which is the U.S. Global Health Initiative approach right now, going to start interfacing with the bottom-up? And there's groups in Kenya who are collaborative groups of NGOs around malaria, around child survival. Like Jerry Maguire says, show me the money. You want to know what to do. Look at where these budgets are going. And I compliment PEPFAR because they have engaged churches and Moss, the most trusted members in society in Africa, to be part of this, together with other NGOs.
Thank you.
So I would like to offer my services to be input into what you've already stated here, so that we start to see some just and lasting change.
Thank you. Let's take three.
Hi, I'm Laura Shimp. I work with John Snow Incorporated with the USAID Maternal Child Health Integrated Project. I also just came back from Kenya. I was in Nyanza and Western, came back a week and a half ago, and we were looking at health facilities and what support we're going to be giving to the Department of Child and Adolescent Health. And your point, I think, is one that I'd like to follow up on, which is this issue of the division of the ministries and the division of the districts and the structural reform that's happening in Kenya, which is a big part of the problem with preventive health. They're having difficulty just meeting their operational costs now, because in the division of the ministries, the cost share that used to pay for the preventive services like vaccination, antenatal care, that kind of thing, is now not distributing there the way it used to. So there's a higher level sort of advocacy, I think, that's needed to adjust for the situation, and also the division of the districts and new districts. So I was curious if that came up in your conversations and how that might be able to be dealt with in a political way, but also through the coordination among the donors. And this is a bigger issue, not just for Kenya. When you're looking more at global policy, it's an issue. DR Congo is having the same problem. Southern Sudan is having the same problem. It's this issue of commodities and emergency getting addressed, but not necessarily the longer-term operational needs that are really the day-to-day, the fuel for the vehicles, the transport to get out to the communities for outreach. So ways that we can deal with that, not just the emergency commodity procurement things.
Very good points.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for your presentation. My name is Salam Daniel, and I'm an associate consultant at McKinsey & Company, a few blocks up the road. I recently wrapped up a study in Tanzania where we were studying the link between climate change and health, specifically droughts and health. And you mentioned droughts in Kenya. We focused on, you know, figuring out by the year 2030 how many people will be sick due to the increased droughts, specifically in terms of malnutrition, cholera, blindness diseases, et cetera. But I heard some shocking anecdotal stories about the links between droughts and HIV/AIDS in Tanzania, and specifically that as the droughts increase, men are forced to leave the home and look for work elsewhere. Secondly, I heard shocking stories about transactional sex for water and how this was leading to increases in HIV/AIDS in Tanzania. I'm curious if you heard anything about the link between droughts and HIV/AIDS during your trip to Kenya.
Thank you. Why don't we pause for a moment and come back?
Well, Let me tell you this. Thank you for everybody who spoke is doing tremendous work, and this is the kind of way, this is the way we're going to actually get somewhere. You know, many hands make short work. First of all, Doctor, thank you for the work that you're doing. Your point about going from the top down to the bottom up is, I think, a very important point. You know, we have a lot of resource and built-up expectation around the status quo, and therefore we have to challenge it, and that is never easy. So I urge you to keep pushing. We'll push from our side. I think part of the I think this is the way things are going, because I think that we can only be effective if we're meeting the needs of the people who are most affected, and we can't meet their needs unless they're engaged, and they can't be engaged unless we're dealing directly with them. So I think that this is the direction we're going in, but it's not nearly fast enough. I just thank you for the work you're doing. I think that's one of the learnings that we take away, is that you've got to be dealing with the grassroots. And if you're not, you're just, well, who knows what you're doing. In terms of the difficulties with the ministries, where's the young lady? Yeah. I tell you that I could have spent my whole 7 minutes talking about that problem. I was trying to do a survey, but you're directly on, Mark. What do you do about these dual divisions everywhere? You know, it's a political problem that Kenyans must face. I think as members of the global community, we have every right to say, you guys have to deal with this. The same way Kofi Annan was doing just the other day. And how this is not working. You know, and it may work for the two political parties that are sharing power, but it's not working for the people. And of course, this same thing could be said to us as Americans, right? The two political parties, things working for us that don't work for everybody else. But the reality is, it's not working. And there's already a short money. You know, money's already short. So now we're going to have two administrations and share the money, thereby driving up more administrative costs and reducing the amount of money for people. So this is a political problem. And I don't know any other solution other than Kenyan political leadership dealing with it and the international community saying you must deal with it. And, you know, when I talked about that little story about that young our parliamentarian, you know, what I was trying to convey to you, perhaps not well enough, is that they know that they have serious political problems and they know that they have resource problems. And yet, as much as you know it, it's still so hard to deal with. So this is something I think we just got to continue to push these issues of governance and rule of law, and that's critical. Now, when it comes to the connection between HIV and cholera and global climate change and other illnesses, absolutely, we heard those stories. We heard those stories, and we heard them again and again. Here's the reality. I was talking to Johnny Cochran. I had the chance to talk to him last week when he was in Minneapolis. And I think the administration is fixed on issues of climate change in Africa and how devastating they are and how important they are to address. It goes back to capacity. The best donor in the world can't do what a committed, organized local government can do. And the expectation is that we have to work in concert and together. But yeah, transactional sex for water, we heard that story. Men leaving home and getting into other arrangements, we heard that. Truck drivers stopping off in places, we heard that. In fact, the counseling services, what do you call those? VCT. Yeah, VCT. Yeah, we saw those in the places that they probably would do the most good, outside of truck stops, outside of various places. In fact, when they were located too centrally around where regular folks went, that wasn't good because people then wouldn't want to go. This issue of stigma is a huge thing, and yet the challenges are serious and immense. But thank you for your work in Tanzania, and appreciate that.
Yeah, David Bryden with the Infectious Disease Society of America. Thank you for the frank and genuine way you're talking about these issues and the way that you address gender-based violence. That's number one. And thank you to CSIS for bringing these complex issues to the fore. And I wanted to just raise two concerns. I do feel we need to hold Kenya and other governments to a very high standard. We also need to hold our own government, as you know, to a high standard. And you mentioned stigma. Two concerns. One, stigma. When we look at the women who are speaking in that film, they would be mainly taking a regimen that it causes lipodystrophy, causes them to lose the fat on the bottoms, on the soles of their feet. We know women in Kenya walk very far. It can have all kinds of side effects. It's called D4T. We don't hear much enthusiasm for moving away from that regimen, from the administration, for all kinds of reasons, mostly having to do with cost. But there are models that show the cost effectiveness of actually moving to a better regimen. A South African physician was visiting recently. He said to me, "We wouldn't prescribe that medication to a dog in the West." And yet that's the medication that we're prescribing all over Africa. That's concern number one when we talk about the women. Number two, when we talk about the women and men, for that matter, that want to be employed, as the gentleman back here was saying. We do have this direction in Hydlantos about 140,000 new healthcare workers. The latest we heard from Ambassador Goosby was, well, we're not quite sure that we can do that, right? We might have to do that with task shifting, with using existing personnel. Well, that's what the law says. The law does say new healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. So how are we going to get, and you mentioned local capacity, how are we going to get the financing to actually make that commitment real?
Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
Hi, yes. Jeff Locke, Population Action International. I want to thank CSIS, CARE, and the Congressman for this morning. It's been highly informative. Congressman, as you sit on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, I'm curious for your thoughts on the balance of the U.S. government's global health portfolio in Kenya. I mean, justifiably, we feel we need to be providing prevention, care, and treatment for HIV/AIDS, but I'd flag that in the CSIS TRIP report, it notes that in FY08, the U.S. government provided $534 million for HIV/AIDS, $3.5 million for maternal and child health, and $13 million was dedicated for family planning. And my question then is, if you felt, while on the ground, you saw the need for or heard from the people on the ground, whether it be mission staff or civil society, for a more balanced U.S. global health funding portfolio and for better integration with underfunded programs such as maternal child health and family planning.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. That was an excellent question. Yes, please.
Thank you very much, Congressman Ellison. Thank you for your leadership. Good to see you again. The most important thing right now in Kenya is to build local communities or local organizations to be able to respond to the challenges that they have. Unfortunately, most of the funding from here and elsewhere around the world goes to big NGOs or to the government, and it doesn't really trickle down enough to have an impact on the ground. And even at the moment, we do need to have community healing, and it's not going to happen at the top level. It has to happen on the ground. And the second comment for me is that for leaders like yourself and others who are going to our country, it's very important to remain neutral. Don't side with any of the parties, because when you are there, they will try to put up the best image they can to please you, but they are all culpable. In my opinion, both parties have failed Kenyans, and we have to look for ways to hold them accountable. And until we hit them or until we touch where it hurts, they will continue to thrive. Actually, all of them did not lose anybody in the politically instigated ethnic clashes, and yet local Kenyans lost relatives. But they are relating to one another on a high level, but not on the community level. So I would kindly ask that we remain with that neutrality and also challenge your own government to fund the local communities rather than the national NGOs or international NGOs. Thank you.
Right. Should we take one more comment, and then we can come back to you, and then we'll be at the end of our hour. Yes, please.
Okay, good morning. My name is Dr. Kate Telenko, and I'm the incoming deputy director of USAID's new Global Health Workforce Program. We have a direct mandate to train 140,000 new health workers over the next 5 years, and we can do it. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And we'll start with looking at the morbidity and mortality data in countries and working with the Ministry of Health to look at the type of health team they need, because we have to move a lot of countries away from a very outdated nurse-physician model, looking more at what sanitarians, hygienists, community health workers can do. Also, I'm very pleased that you mentioned management skills. A lot of physicians and nurses, in order to move up in their careers, are forced into management positions that they've had no training for and often no inclination, no interest in. And one of our partners in this program is the Global Business Community, and the Global Business School Community. And we plan through them to train thousands, if not tens of thousands, of new health managers.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Do we want to take one more and then we'll wrap it up?
Thank you very much. I represent today the Kakenya Center for Excellence in Inusian, founded by Kakenya Ntaiya, who is from Inusian, very remote village. She was betrothed at age 5 to Mary. She discovered at the end of her grade school that she wanted to continue her education. She bargained with her father, who allowed her to continue her education and not marry, but she did need to go through female genital mutilation, which we haven't heard anything about today. But that is a common problem. She made her way to the U.S. to come to college. She's getting her doctorate in international education here so that she can return to her home community and serve it as best she can. She's flying back from Nairobi right now. She works with Vital Voices quite a bit, takes part in conferences. But health education is a big part of the school. What the earlier woman was saying about working at the community level, this is an example of a community coming together. And we're actually seeking out in our admissions people with HIV because they are so reluctant to come forward to admit that they have it. The school admits people who are at risk of getting FGM, child marriage, and, doing the best they can. But talk about aid. The local parliamentarian has pledged a nice sum of money, $20,000 to start work on a dormitory. When we were talking about the feet, problem with the feet, many of these girls are walking hours to get to this school. We had 100 applicants for 30 places back in February. So this girls' school is needed. The girls' education in Kenya is in Inusian, rather, is pretty poor. They're basically gathering water for the boys while the boys get the attention because it's assumed that the girls will go on to get married and serve their families. So,
thank you.
Just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you.
As a good example.
Well, we're getting towards the end here. Would you like to offer some?
Yeah, well, let me just say in closing, thanks to everybody again. I think we all have to view each other as partners of each other and work hard on this, and we need to encourage each other and hold each other accountable. And I want you to know that as I offer my comments and observations today, it's not with the spirit that the rest of the world needs to buck up and we have all the answers. It is with a spirit of humility and just brother and sisterhood, that we need to reach out to our other people around the world and find ways to enhance their lives as we enhance our own. And it sounds corny, but that's what I believe, so whatever. Let me make sure everybody's ready to go. Let me just say that where's the gentleman who talked about the ARV's side effects?
David.
David, I got to tell you the truth. I did not know that. I did not know that as a side effect. Now I do, and so now I have a responsibility to try to do something. Thanks for sharing that. That's important. This is the first time I heard that. And so that's something that really we calls for more exploration. All medications have side effects. I didn't know that was one of them. But it just goes to show that we've got to constantly be reexamining what we're doing and putting forth the best that we have at the moment. So thanks for bringing that out. We'll take that away, and I'm sure others heard your comment as well. And I think as we do formulate a better approach to the world, a smarter approach to the world, with regard to and vis-a-vis global health, we've got to understand we can't give people the worst drugs we have. We got to give them something that actually enhances their lives. Now, I know that the ARVs do lengthen life. I'm sure of that. But they, what else do they do besides that? And are there better ways? And I think that's the point that you're making. And I thank you for raising that point. Let me also say that my friend from Kenya, I'm sorry, give me your name again.
Pauline.
Pauline and I have met before. Always insightful. Always has important things to share with us. And you know, absolutely, we cannot get into the political Kenyan conflict. What we have to do is encourage all sides to resolve the political crisis for the sake of the people. And I think we do have a right to do that as a member of the global community. But I also think you're right. If blame was a cake in Kenya, everybody could have a slice, you know. And that's a fact. So I think that's a very wise advice to not side with one party or the other, because there is this impulse to say, well, who's to blame, right? Who's the problem? Well, everybody. That's the problem. And so thank you for that advice. And you're absolutely right. We've got to, one of the things we must do is have our global health approach have much more direction from the base. Here's the challenge, though. I think PEPFAR does go pretty far, pretty deep into the weeds to get aid and assistance to people. But in the normal course of events, we're kind of going to go through the institutions that are present, right? I mean, once we get out of an emergency situation, we're going to be dealing with governments, we're going to be dealing with NGOs. So we've got to be very vigilant on this issue of governance yet again. And I think that, you know, sometimes working on issues of governance is complicated, because it kind of feels like you're telling someone else how to live their life or how to do their business. But if we can be more efficient and more effective, and we can help strengthen parliaments and strengthen institutions, we've got to do it. And it goes to the doctor's point about partnering with American business schools to help train medical administrators. Something I think that I hope that we all take out of here and start thinking about what American and Western universities and other universities can do to help build hospital administrators to make more efficient, effective delivery of what the actual provider has expertise in, because we are kind of going haphazard in that regard. And so let me just say finally, you know, I'm committed to this in the long term. I know all of you are as well. Let's continue to work hard on these issues. We are in the middle, or really more or less in the beginning, of a redraft, rewrite, reconception of how the United States does foreign aid. And we need to reconceive these things. As we're developing our new approach, all of these new things that we have learned have got to make it into this new approach. Because we are in a changing era. We're not in a Soviet era anymore. We're in an era where we have to have a new set of relationships based much more on equality than in the past. But we haven't done it this way before, so we've got to learn it all, and it's not easy, and there will be mistakes along the way. So please stay engaged and stay involved, and thank you to CSIS. Thank you to CARE. Thank you to the staffs of both, and thanks to all of you.
Thank you. We're adjourned.